Welcome to NHL Draft Class. Adam Kimmelman here, Mike Morial in the land of fabulous coffee. I hope you're all juiced up, coffeed up, ready to go there, Mike.
Yeah, I am, Adam. This is going to be a great show. You know, we have Dan Marr, a director of NHL Central Scouting, on with us today. So we're going to dive deep into these, Central Scouting's rank. It's going to be a fun show for sure.
Yeah, we're going to have Dan. We're also going to do some talk about our mock drafts in a little bit. We had our post-lottery mock drafts. The Buffalo Sabres won the right to have the number one pick, the Seattle Kraken number two, the Anaheim Ducks number three, and you can see all that on NHL.com. But, Mike, little quick talk about the lottery. You know, Buffalo really can kind of write its own path here. They've got a big opportunity for them.
Yeah, and, you know, overall they have 10 picks in this draft too, right? So they could do some damage here, Adam. Obviously, there was talk when you listen to Buffalo talk radio, sports radio. Hey, you know, maybe there's an opportunity to trade that number one pick. You know, how often do you get the number one pick in the draft, Adam? And for Buffalo, this will be the fourth time they get the number one in their franchise history. Obviously, most recently, Rasmus Dahlin a few years back, the great defenseman who's coming into his own. But, you know, to be honest, and I'd love to get your opinion, too. If you have the number one pick, and look, I get it. Buffalo, look, they've missed the playoffs consecutively for many years now.
Yeah, they need a lot of help in a lot of different areas. But, you know, if you go into next season with your top four defense, and you can group them any way you want, of Rasmus Dahlin, Rasmus Ristolainen, Jake McCabe, who's going to come back healthy next season, and Owen Power, that's a pretty good, you know, foundation to build off of. And I know the Sabres fans don't want to hear, you know, look at the future. But look, you can add an 18-year-old defenseman who's 6'6", 213 pounds, skates well. He's already got experience playing with and against NHL competition. He was a standout player at 18 years old for Canada at the World Championship. He's a reason they won that gold medal. You know, he wasn't just along for the ride. He was a driver for them in a lot of situations, you know, after a little bit of a slow start, but that whole Canada team started slow. What, they lost their first three games? Yeah, you can add an Owen Power to your back end. That's a pretty, pretty juicy piece to add as you're trying to, you know, again, this endless rebuilding cycle for the Sabres. But, man, you can add that foundational defenseman to what they already have, they're going to be in really good shape. No, unless the offer is so ridiculous that you can't pass on it, you keep that pick and you take Owen Power.
Yeah, I think the better option is to maybe look at some of those other picks that they do have, because I think teams would be clamoring or have some interest in having later picks in this draft, right? Because of the uncertainty and some of the players that you thought might be drafted a little higher, at least on some boards for some NHL clubs here, maybe they drop a little bit. So you have those picks early second, third round, where you say, hey, here's that goalie we were looking at as in the late first or second, mid second round. And here he is in the third round. Let's go get him. So there's that opportunity as well with multiple assets, multiple draft picks for the Sabres in this case.
Oh, for sure. You cast that net wide this year. This is a year that you want as many picks as you can get, just so you have as wide a net, as big a net as you can cast to catch some of these guys. But, you know, we're going to be here at the draft before you know it, and we're going to get Dan Marr from Central Scouting on in a few minutes to talk about the final rankings. But now's the time to start studying for the draft. If you want to know what your team should do, it's July 23rd and 24th. It's going to be here before you know it, and NHL Draft Class really is going to have your best source of information. Last show, we had Greg Rajanin on from NHL Central Scouting. He talked about some of the top prospects in the United States Hockey League, you know, college prospects, and we talked a little bit about Owen Power, and you know, you want to keep an eye out on some of his teammates, Kent Johnson and Matthew Beniers, and, you know, previous shows we've had on some of the top prospects, Brant Clark from the defenseman from Barry in the Ontario League, Matthew Coronado, just named USHL Forward of the Year, Chaz Lucius and Sasha Postajov from the United States National Team Development Program. You know, if you want to catch up on any of your draft knowledge, if you want to study up for what's coming, I highly recommend listening to some of the past episodes of NHL Draft Class.
Absolutely. Goran Stube was on as well, right, Adam, a few weeks back, and we were able to get all that insight into the international prospects, which is always a great show. And Goran is a wealth of knowledge with regard to the European prospects. And there are a multitude of Euro prospects this season that we'll be keeping our eye on.
Well, let's bring in Dan Marr, the director of NHL Central Scouting. Dan, thank you for joining us on NHL Draft Class. How are things going?
Very good, and happy to be talking to you guys today.
Well, it's great to have you on, especially in this busy time of the year. And the Central Scouting final rankings came out very recently. And I'm curious, you know, you're in those final meetings with the rest of the scouts and you're setting that final order. Was it unanimous that Owen Power, the defenseman from the University of Michigan, would be the number one guy on the North American list? Can you take us inside what those discussions were like and what the group sort of liked about his game and his potential at the next level?
Well, as you know, going into every season, we have a list, you know, a futures list where we look at the potential top picks. And, you know, his name was certainly in the mix. But I don't know that a lot of people would have pegged him as being the top guy at the start of the year. And he is like a well-known, well-scouted commodity in the sense that we've been watching him play since 2018. And, you know, he just started off in such an impressive manner that, you know, right away talk jumped for him being at the start. And you just take all that, you know, that word of mouth and that talk with a grain of salt. But then when our guys started to watch him and pay attention to him, we had a couple of live views as well. It quickly became apparent that, like, you know, he was the real deal to be the number one guy overall. So in a sense, like, you know, he did earn it. And it was unanimous. Like everyone on our staff has him as the number one pick for the 2021 draft class. And now the number two pick, that's a whole other discussion. But with Owen, just the way he went out there with the confidence and the control that he had when he played the game. So he's got a mix of you know, the type of defenseman that have success at the NHL and at this point, where he's that dynamic skater that can join the rush. He's the tall, mobile defenseman with the reach that can defend, but he's very good at reading the plays. And, you know, when clubs watched him recently with Canada on the big ice, the U18 there, because he's so mobile and fast, he was really able to showcase his skills and attributes. And then there were times where you could see he's a young player that needs to learn how to manage the risk reward opportunities and know when to really pinch or join the rush. But that just comes with experience and with coaching. But the element of what the player brings to the game, like the sum of all his parts, it's a top end NHL package that can come in. And, you know, he's not that far away from being able to play. And, you know, it's just going to take him time to learn the nuances of the NHL game once he gets to the NHL. But everything he did this year, I would phrase it as impressive. And that's not a word that a lot of NHL scouts use very often, but every part of his game was impressive this year.
Certainly was. And now going to that number two ranking for Mason McTavish on NHL Central Scouting's final ranks of the North Americans, Dan. Mason really seemed to establish himself to the scouts in a season where that wasn't so easy. I would think his performance at the U18s probably tipped the scales a bit. 5 goals, 11 points, 27 shots on goal in 7 games for first place Canada at the U18s. What catapulted him to number two on Central's final rankings of the North Americans?
Well, as I mentioned, going into the year, we have our futures list, and he was, you know, certainly at the top of the Ontario Hockey League list, him and Brant Clark. And so I wouldn't necessarily say that the U18s catapulted him up in the rankings. He was always projected to be a top pick. And as you both know well, the OHL has some good players that are always near the top end of the draft. Just go back with Byfield and Drysdale last year. So like he was in that spot, but what he did was he confirmed the projection and the potential that, you know, most of the scouting fraternity had on him. He went over and played in Switzerland, and, you know, we have a, you know, 8 full-time scouts. So like practically every game he played was seen. We have a scout that works for Goran Stube and European Scouting Services over in Switzerland. And it's in a pro league, like he stepped in and he got better every game. And it got to be near the end of his play there. Every time he was on the ice, he was controlling the play and making things happen. And he just brought that confidence, that game experience with him to the U18. He has the benefit of being a physically mature player right now. He has that size and strength. So just the fact that he went there, utilized all his skills and assets, competed, produced, contributed, it just confirmed what all the scouts already knew about him. But like, you know, when you get to see it live, it's, you know, there's a certain comfort level when you're picking that high in the draft to be considering a player. You really want to know as much as you can about him. And the number 2 spot on our list was not an easy, 2 through 6. These were not consensus spots. Everyone had could make an argument for any one of these players. You know, Matty Beniers could go number 2 overall. It wouldn't surprise any of us. We're talking about some exceptional, talented, yet very different style players that are available, and they're all earmarked to have very strong NHL careers.
Just a quick follow on McTavish, Dan. You know, we all like player comparisons. And I watched McTavish on video and saw him at the U18s. Do you see a little Ryan O'Reilly in him?
Well, he's got that style or that element to his game. I can see that. But, you know, there's some other power forwards. I think he can play more of a power forward game once he gets to the NHL. But there's a lot of similarities that you can bring up with him with a number of players.
Yeah, that's true. You watch McTavish, and I know Mark Stone plays a different position. McTavish is obviously a center, but I could see a lot of Mark Stone attributes in his game as well.
And on his questionnaire, he compares himself to Anders Lee from the Islanders. And, you know, in his prime, you can also see similar comparisons there. So, like, he's in a good group of comparables.
Yeah. Do you see similarities or more differences in the gameplay of Luke Hughes and Simon Edvinson? Hughes, of course, is number 4 on Central's North American skaters rankings, and Edvinson is number 2. On the international list. I think we were all kind of disappointed that we didn't get to see them go head to head at the U18s. I thought Edvinson looked really good. Hughes had a great finish to his season with the NTTP before his injury in March. What do you think about those two players?
Well, if you would have just asked this question as a hypothetical, the first thing when you see the name Hughes, you probably would have said the size difference. But Luke is a Hughes that has size. Even his brothers are baffled as to where he's getting the size from, and he's continuing to grow. But both of these guys have a dynamic skating, puck-moving game. They're comfortable having the puck in their stick, which means that, you know, with both of these players, you know, they're comfortable with having the game on the line and the puck in their stick. They're, because when push comes to shove, when Sweden was down, and if the USA was down, like both of them would take control and lead the charge. They could create some offense. They make sure the puck was in the offensive zone. And it's easy to focus on the skating, the puck skills, the offensive contributions of them. But they're both very responsible players defensively, and they're both highly competitive. The one thing that I really think stands out for Edmondson is that he's got the hands and the moves of a forward. It's not often you see a defenseman that can enter the offensive zone and then stick handle through traffic and have the hands to dipsy doodle down low along the boards while they're being checked. And in the, so I do think he has an advantage there, but both of them from at the offensive blue line have strong games. They both play an NHL style and both of them have really bright futures.
And one of the defensemen stick in that position for a minute that's really interested me is Carson Kuhlman's number 14 in the final rankings, right shot, good size at 6'2 and 198 pounds, played 8 games with Brooks in the Alberta Junior League and for Canada at the World Under 18s. What stood out about Kuhlman's when your scouts watched him, and was there an extra challenge when it came to comparing him to the other top defensemen because he didn't play in the CHL, didn't really play against the best in his age group outside of, you know, a handful of games at the under 18s?
Well, I'll answer the last part of the questions first in that the, like the Cale Makars and the Bernard Dockers, there's some players that have gone where they've played the junior A route, not in the CHL, that have gone on to play at university for 1 or 2 years and then move on and, you know, show that they're really strong NHL prospects. And he's followed the same path as those before him in that he was a player with Canada's U17 program where he excelled and stood out. He excelled as a younger player in the Alberta Junior Hockey League. And having that, again, he was a well-known commodity. He was an A player going into this draft class. So the start to the COVID season was difficult for everyone. And I think he'd be the first to admit he probably didn't get off to the best start. There was a lot of distractions going on at all levels of play. But, you know, the opportunity presented himself where he could join Canada. And he actually was nursing he was nursing a knee issue where they did let him rest at the start. But as the tournament went on, his game got better and better. He got into a zone to where the scouts could see the player that they were projecting to watch during the 2021 season. And he brings such a smartness to the game. He's very calm, collected. But he's got a deceptive gear to where he can pull away quickly when the opportunity presents himself. So like his hockey sense is really high. It's most likely his best asset, but he's got the wherewithal with his skills and that to make plays, set up plays and make a lot of things happen on the ice. So like the U18 tournament did benefit him because he got more of a peer comparable that could be taken. And he really played strong for Canada in that series there. He was one of those guys that went out there every shift and he got the job done.
William Mecklen of Djurgården may not be getting the recognition he probably deserves, Dan, as a possible number one pick in this draft. And that's despite the fact he's number one in Central's final rankings of international skaters. Should he be in that conversation?
Most definitely. This is a player who I believe it was in early November, they were on the road and he had an emergency appendectomy, which took him out of the lineup. He was selected to play with Sweden at the World Juniors. He was expected to be one of the better players because he was having a strong season in the Swedish Hockey League. And then he tested positive for COVID along with a number of other players, which ruled him out from play there. When he did return to the lineup, his team had lost, I believe, like seven straight games without him in the lineup. And then when he was back in the lineup, made a difference to the team. He was the rookie of the year in the top pro league in Sweden. He put up numbers. He contributed. He made things happen. He's not the biggest guy, but he competes hard with everything that he has. You can just tell he's a player that likes to win, and he's got the skills and the hockey smarts. And then unfortunately for him, he earned the right to participate in the men's world championship, suffered an injury in an exhibition game and wasn't able to play there. So he's had the school of hard knocks this year with a lot of adversity, yet he still excelled. And that says something about a player like that. So like, he's a player that is not going to be denied. And, you know, if you might rue the day if you go by him in the draft.
Dan, you mentioned Matty Beniers from University of Michigan before. And I'm curious, when you're obviously Michigan was must watch for you and your staff between Owen Power, Matthew Beniers, and Kent Johnson. When you're trying to scout Beniers and Johnson, both forwards, how was Central able to kind of parse out the strengths and weaknesses in their games? And what was it about Johnson that got him that he ended up at number three in the rankings and Beniers at number six?
Well, I wouldn't say we were able to sort anything out. As I mentioned, from two to six, these were very difficult choices. One of the things in Ken Johnson's favor for us was his goal scoring ability. And again, the fact that he stepped in from the tier two level, played in the NCAA, took on a leadership role. The coach there, Mel Pearson, did a tremendous job in putting all three of them in positions to have success. And he stepped in with the confidence that he just went out and showed the goal scorer, the type of player that he is. But he's a strong skater, a good NHL skater. He has the hockey sense, but he's just a wizard with the puck. And that type of skill set, that type of production, that type of contribution to a team, it's hard not to place him up there. But then he does the same thing when it comes to contributions for teams. And he's a valuable player. When you watch the NHL playoffs, you look at the guys that make a difference for the team, and it's always the Matty Beniers. And he's not going to be called elite as a skater, elite with his skill set, but he has skill sets. He has hockey sense. He's got speed to go out there and get the job done and contribute. And I'm repeating myself here. He could go number two in this draft class, and, you know, it wouldn't surprise anybody, and, you know, we'd be really happy for him.
Well, Dan, we always have to give love to our goalies, the most important position on the ice here. And, hey, there's a good chance we'll see two goalies chosen in the first round for the first time since 2012. Of course, Tampa Bay selected Andre Vasilevskiy that year, and the Bruins, Malcolm Subban. But first off, why are teams reluctant to draft goalies so early? And then as part two to this, what makes Jesper Wallstat and Sebastian Kosa candidates to be selected that high this year?
Well, as history has shown, goaltending is one of the tougher positions to master. And it just does take a little bit longer for the goaltenders to get established at the National Hockey League level. It's a highly competitive league. You're facing the best shooters in the game. And there used to be more risks, more chances taken with the goaltenders. But as the speed of the game is picked up here, the goal scoring has picked up. You've seen that shift to where teams are a little bit more reluctant. And in a lot of cases, if the team has a solid number one, and you know, there's been a lot of goalies have been number one for their team for close to a decade, there just isn't that need to step up. And this thing does go in stages. I remember when I first started scouting, you know, the viewpoint, you pick up the goalies in the third and fourth round. And then, you know, as some teams started to have success with different goaltenders, and it went to where you were taking the Marty Brodeurs in there earlier in the draft. And then it's gone down again. And now, you know, I think we're seeing a bit of a trend where it's coming up. And, you know, most of these goalies do have size, but there's where you have to be a little bit careful. It's not, there's a lot of 6 foot, 6 foot one goalies playing in the National Hockey League making a difference. And the one thing with Jesper Wallstedt, he's a well-known commodity. We've seen him go head to head in a lot of games where just the competitive nature to him stands out. He almost defies you to score on him. And he's just been very consistent in his approach. And Kosa, the same thing, has the size, and they're able to aggressively and assertively challenge on the plays. And when players are coming in on them, they're looking for that spot where they can beat them, and they don't give them anything. And these are the type of goalies that at the end of the day, you want guys that stop pucks. And sounds easy, and as we all know, very difficult to do. But they're both highly athletic, which I think is a tremendous advantage now, highly competitive, and they play to win. Their techniques are solid. They're going to improve as they go along. They're going to receive some specialized coaching as they continue on their development path. But right now, they're two nice looking packages that I think any team would be happy to add them to their stable of young players.
Dan, we could go up and down the list and talk about all these guys. The great insight that you give us. Thank you so much for joining us on NHL Draft Class today.
No problem, gentlemen. Thank you.
Thanks again to Dan Marr, director of NHL Central Scouting, for sharing some of his insights with us. And, you know, Mike, one of the things that stood out to me in a year full of question marks seemed like Owen Power was a real exclamation point for those guys at their final meetings. You know, we've both been through those final meetings. We know how those discussions can go long and loud and lots of back and forth. But the fact that Dan said it was unanimous that Owen Power is their number one guy and there wasn't, you know, a lot of contrary debate, it's pretty interesting, you know, because it was so difficult this year to scout guys versus previous years. You know, you had to rely on video. You had to rely on, you know, limited in-person viewings. You didn't have the looks at many guys as you wanted to. But, you know, look, we can all watch on video and see what Owen Power can do from our eyes. But from expert eyes, they're seeing it. And it was confirmed that everything they thought about Owen Power coming into the season, he just reinforced it and continued to reinforce it through the NCAA season. And you were able to catch a lot of the games of the World Championship.
Yeah. Yeah, Adam. And I think his play at the World Championship just kind of solidified, confirmed, if you had any reason to doubt that this 6 foot six, 213 pound left-handed shot wasn't going to be number one. I think he actually, you know, said, hey, here I am. If you have the number one pick, I'm the player for you. And look, big presence. He averaged over 20 minutes a game for Canada in those 10 games at the World Championship. Obviously, Canada won the gold medal, took 25 plus shots. He was on the ice in big situations. You know, Gerard Gallant had no issues playing him in key moments late in the game, tied game, power play. I mean, he was on the ice. And I think what kind of, you know, told me a lot is, you know, when you talk to some of the players on that Canadian team, Adam, Darcy Kemper, for instance, the goaltender of that club, said that Power, he's such a young kid, but he played like a 10-year veteran. Adam Henrique, the captain of Team Canada, you know, praised and lauded how, you know, Power was just that kid in the locker room. He was quiet, But when he got on the ice, you know, he was that player that you would anticipate and expect to be a future star in the NHL. So some high praise for some veteran players, veteran NHL players, and, of course, Gerard Gallant there. So obviously in our mock drafts, we each had Owen Power going number one to the Buffalo Sabres, who we expect to keep the pick and take Power. But number two was kind of equal too, right, Adam? You know, you like Matty Beniers. I like Matty Beniers. It looks like he might be that two-way center that GM Ron Francis is looking for, huh?
You know, when I watched Matthew Beniers, the guy that immediately popped into my mind, and you heard Dan Marr. Dan Marr said he wouldn't be surprised to see Beniers go number two. You know, but the guy that popped into my mind with Jonathan Toews, just the way he impacted the game in all areas. I don't know if Jonathan Toews was as quick a skater at 18 as Matthew Beniers is, but the speed just stands out. The relentlessness of how he plays just stands out. You know, he was the number two center as an underager on that world junior team that won the gold medal. And he was out there. He wasn't just out there as a passenger. He was out there killing penalties. He played second line minutes. He was a key contributor for a championship team as an underage player. To me, you know, we've never had college guys from the same team go 1-2, but I think this is the year that it could happen. And look, if I'm the Seattle Kraken and I'm looking to build that foundational piece, I want a guy who can touch the game in every area. And Matthew Beniers is a guy who looks like he'll be able to impact the game 5-on-5, power play, penalty kill, first minute of a game, last minute of a game. He's a guy that, to me, if I'm Seattle, he's the guy I want.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Look, Jonathan Toews is a future Hall of Fame player, so it's hard for me to compare right at this moment Beniers with Jonathan Toews. When I look at Beniers, I see a Bo Horvat type of player. I like what he was able to bring and a lot of the qualities and attributes that you just mentioned there, Adam. We know that Beniers did sustain an injury in the World Championship against Slovakia in the quarterfinal round, played a little over 2 minutes before sustaining what looked to be a right leg injury after crashing into the end boards, missed the final two games of the tournament against Canada and Germany in the third place game for the United States. But look, he had a great season for the University of Michigan. Stood out as the second line center for the U.S. at the World Junior Championship. He was killing penalties there, averaged over 17 minutes of ice time in 7 games. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, Ron Francis was one of the league's best two-way centermen. And in his first draft as Carolina GM, in fact, he chose a defenseman, Hayden Fleury, over a few good forwards, including Dylan Larkin. But that's going to change. So while I think that this draft is heavy with defensemen, I still think that he's going to go with this best two-way center here, and that would be Matty Beniers. And then that's when everything started, right, Adam? Yep. With the Anaheim Ducks, that's when we started you know, changing up slots and picks and where players might go, and that's what you would expect in this draft.
Yeah, you know, I listened to Bob Murray, the Anaheim Ducks GM, at his end of season wrap-up, and what really stood out to me and why I put Dylan Gunther in this spot, the right wing from the Edmonton Oil Kings, is they need scores. They need an impact forward, and they've drafted a few the last few years, and the jury's still out on guys like Max Comtois and Sam Steele and Max Jones, and they got some good impact from Trevor Zegras, but he's just one guy, and they expect more of those guys to step up, but you can never have too many dynamic elite forwards, and that's what Dylan Gunther looks like he's going to be. Look, he averaged 2 points per game in the Western League, jumping into the lineup in February when he hadn't played at all before that. So to me, the energy level is there. The skating is there. The shot is there. He's a guy that, you know, if you're looking to add offense, I think he's the next best offensive player available in the draft. You know, the William Eklund from Djurgården, obviously was the SHL rookie of the year, the Swedish Hockey League. You know, he's an interesting choice there also. But for me, Dylan Gunther is the guy. I think he'll be a huge asset to the Ducks, you know, when he's NHL ready.
Yeah, I like Gunther, but for me, I think I'm going to take the sure thing here. And based on what I saw at the U18s and also, you know, what Dan Marr discussed with Simon Edvinson, the defenseman from Frölunda's junior team, I like Simon Edvinson here. The Ducks have had success in identifying defensemen between 2007 and 18, Jake Gardner, Justin Schultz, Cam Fowler, Shea Theodore, Marcus Pedersen, Brandon Montour. So, you know, I know Theodore is in Vegas now, Schultz is in Washington, Montour is in Florida, but I think they need to bolster up their pipeline with some defensemen here. And I think Simon Evanson is the guy, 6'4", 198 pounds. He's physical. He's got that left shot, real good set of tools. So I like what I've seen at Evanson, and I think he should go number three here in the draft. Now, number four, the New Jersey Devils, on the other hand, they might have an opportunity here, Adam, to select Luke Hughes. And the irony of that is the fact, of course, that Jack Hughes is a center for the Devils. So that would be kind of cool if Hughes can be selected by the Devils, then you have the brothers playing with one another in New Jersey. But look, Hughes can play both points. He proved that with the NTDB this year, played a majority of the season on the right-hand side. He's a left-handed shot. You know, I think the runway for Hughes is long and wide. He was really on the upward projection at the time of his unfortunate injury on March 7th and probably would have given Power a run for his money down the stretch had he played in the U18s and played down the stretch. He might have even had an opportunity to play with the U.S. at the World Championships. Who knows? But it was a shame we didn't get to see him late in the season. But I still think there's a lot there for Luke Hughes, and that's why I think the Devils will take him at four.
Well, so let's move ahead to number six here, and this is where it gets a little interesting. Now, you went with Mason McTavish, and that's a little bit of a safe pick. I'm looking at the history of the general manager here, and I had the Red Wings taking Jesper Wallstedt, the goalie from Luleå in Sweden. We talked to Dan about Jesper, and to me, the Red Wings have drafted very well. They've assembled a nice group of prospects, you know, from Filip Zadina to Joe Valeno to Michael Rasmussen to Lucas Raymond, who's probably going to play there next year, Moritz Seider. You know, they need a goalie. That's the last missing piece from what they haven't added yet. I think Wallstedt is that good of a goalie. He's the best goalie in this year's draft class. You have the opportunity to get that player. You know, he's not going to be there when Detroit has their pick in the second round. So you can either roll the dice at number six, roll the dice that he's going to be there for you, you know, if you can get back into the lower end of the first round, but why not take him when he's there? You know, he's certainly not he's certainly a high-end prospect, high-end goalie, 6'3", 214. He has experience playing at the highest level in Sweden. They're not going to rush him, but to me, if he's the best player on their list, they're going to take him. And Steve Yzerman is someone who, look, go back 2 years ago. They had the number six pick, and they took Moritz Seider, and we all looked at ourselves and said, what's he doing? Why is he taking the German defenseman at number six? And now here we are saying 2 years later, Moritz Seider is a foundational piece for the Red Wings moving forward. He was the best defenseman in the Swedish Hockey League this year. He looks like a future NHL star, 22 minutes a night kind of guy. I think Jesper Wallstedt, if he's there, I could absolutely see the Red Wings making this move.
That's a bold pick there, Adam.
It is a bold pick.
That's a bold one.
He is a bold man. And look, and you can't say the Red Wings don't need a goalie, right? We all watched it this season. We can all look and see what they have coming. They do not have that top-end goalie. They have top-end prospects all across the board. They do not have a top-end goalie prospect. This is their opportunity to grab him, and I don't see them passing on it.
Well, I do like the boldness of the pick, but I think the Wings will look for a dominant player to play alongside their 2020 first-rounder, Lucas Raymond. And for me, that's McTavish, a dominant, intimidating center, as Dan Moore discussed with us. He was great on draws. And the thing I like about McTavish is the fact he comes up big in crucial situations. That's something Stevie Y loves. The Wings have two picks in the first round. So I do think Sebastian Kosa or Ben Goudreau, by the way, isn't no slouch as far as goalies go. In fact, Adam, we could see three goalies, not just two, but three goalies taken in the first round, because Ben Goudreau of Sarnia was lights out for Canada at the U18s this year. So he might be there as well with their second pick in the first round. I think all three of those goalies are legitimate number one future starting goalies in the NHL. So I think you go with maybe Jesper Wallstedt isn't a sure thing, but I like what McTavish has to offer here, is that intimidating centerman that maybe, you know, they're looking for beyond the Dylan Larkins and some of the other centers they have on that club, and have an opportunity to play with Lucas Raymond for years to come. I think that would be, just what Stevie Y, you know, would like to see and a top prospect that maybe he gets early in the first round here.
So we talked with Dan. He said 2 through 6, it's pretty on their final North American rankings, pretty interchangeable with a lot of debate. Where were some of your biggest debate points when you're kind of laying out your first 15 here?
Yeah, well, you know, the Kent Johnson, Dylan Gunther debate is a good one, I think. You know, I know you had Gunther going a little early. I have Kent Johnson going to the San Jose Sharks at number 7 here. You know, only 6 Sharks forwards are signed beyond this season, and there's not a lot of cap room for GM Doug Wilson to go free agent hunting. So maybe they can target one of the true creative playmakers of this draft in Kent Johnson. I've heard, speaking with scouts, Adam, Kent Johnson's been compared to like a 6'1" Patrick Kane on the ice. So he's that skilled. He doesn't just go north-south. He'll go north, south, east, west to make his way up ice and transition and make plays. So I like Kent Johnson at number 7. I had Dylan Gunther going to the Kings at number 8. You know, I was considering actually I was considering Wallstedt in the Kings spot at number 8, since, let's face it, John Quick is 35, has 2 seasons left on his contract. I know Cal Peterson picked up the slack for the Kings there for the time being. So, you know, maybe they'll go best available here. And that, in my opinion, is Gunther. Plays right wing, offers tremendous shot, could be the future wingman of either Quinton Byfield or Alex Turcotte. All 3 get to learn from the best, right? Anže Kopitar. So I think I like Gunther going to the Kings. But yeah, Dan is right on the mark, right? And I had difficulty in choosing where these players might fit in from 3 to 6. How about you?
Well, you know, you mentioned number 8. I had Luke Hughes going in that spot just because you look at that cavalcade of young forwards they've drafted, Byfield and Turcotte and Kaliev and on, you need somebody to get him the puck. You know, Drew Doughty's north of 30, and, you know, they need somebody who can be that top-end, top-flight defenseman in the next 2-3 years. To me, Luke Hughes is that, could be that guy, the way he skates, the way he moves the puck. You got young forwards, you got to have somebody who can get him the puck and get it to him in the right spots. And to me, that's what Luke Hughes is capable of doing. So I thought the need there was for a defenseman. And at that point, you know, I had, you know, Brant Clark had already been gone. I have Simon Edvinson going. I had Brant Clark going number 4 to the Devils, Simon Edvinson at number 5 to Columbus. To me, the best guy left on the board at that position is Luke Hughes. So to me, I see him as a no-brainer pick for the Kings, the best defenseman available in that spot. So, yeah, but the deeper you go, the harder it got, right? When you're talking, you know, what is Ottawa going to do at 10? What is Chicago at 11 or Calgary at 12 or Philly at 13? You know, there's so many different directions those teams could go because this draft is – and I know some people are kind of down on the draft. It's not a good year, blah, blah, blah. I think they're 100% wrong. I think this is a deep draft full of very skilled players. Are there guys who are going to, you know, make you jump out of your chair at age 18, like a Connor McDavid or an Austin Matthews? Probably not. But 5 years from now, a lot of these guys are going to be foundational NHL players for their team. They're going to be top end guys for whatever team is lucky enough to draft them. I think it's just going to take maybe an extra season or two, but I think the talent is obvious among a lot of these guys.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And just for the record here, you mentioned Jesper Wallstedt going to the Wings. I had him going number 10 to the Ottawa Senators, if he even lasts that long. And the reason being, you know, Matt Murray struggled a little bit this season, his first of a 4-year, $25 million contract. It's not to say he couldn't rebound, but regardless, I still think Ottawa needs a long-term option between the pipes after Matt Sogard, and Wallstedt can marinate in Sweden and then perhaps a season in the AHL in Belleville. And then be ready whenever he's needed, because he is that good a goalie that once he comes up and steps into the NHL, I feel as though he's going to be that star between the pipes. Interesting, though, Adam, I, at number 11 for the Chicago Blackhawks, you know, while we didn't choose the same player, we chose players that kind of had that same path this year. Chaz Lucius, you chose Chaz Lucius from the NTDP, who would suffer, you know, he was suffering from injuries coming back and he played really well. Carson Lambeau similarly suffered some injuries this year. We didn't get to see him play this season, but Yet both these players were regarded very highly by NHL Central Scouting, and we both had them going, you know, separately, obviously, to the Chicago Blackhawks at 11.
Yeah, I think with Lucius, you know, we had him on NHL Draft Class, and you can go back and listen to that episode where he talked about the bone bruise on his knee and how difficult of a rehabilitation that was. But played 13 games, he scored 13 goals, and he would have been a top-end player for U.S. at the under-18s had he been healthy enough to play in that tournament. And who knows, it probably might be a different tournament if they have him there, just with that, the shot, the skill, the skating, the vision that he brings. And with Carson Lambos, you know, you could see a little bit of what he was able to do in Finland on the big ice with the skating and the two-way play. But, you know, it would have been nice to see a little bit more out of him than two games in Winnipeg.
Yeah, I like the Lucius pick that you have for Chicago, but I do think the Blackhawks need more depth on defense in their system. Duncan Keith isn't getting any younger, and the two top prospects in their pipeline right now are probably centers, Lucas Reichel, Evan Barrett. So Lambos could turn out to be the next true number one defenseman that the Blackhawks crave.
Well, if you want to go even deeper in depth on our mock draft, you can find it at NHL.com. And we're going to have all sorts of stories on the draft as we get closer and closer to it. You know, follow us on NHL.com. Follow us here at NHL Draft Class. Mike, we got a lot of good stuff coming up.
Yeah, we certainly do. It's going to be great. We're going to have a lot of stories on NHL.com focusing on player profiles, you know, certain players against certain players, how they match up based on what scouts have told us. So it's going to be interesting, you know, down the stretch here. Stanley Cup playoffs, of course, we're in the middle of that. But come July, start of July, first week, it's, you know, you and I are going to go full bore with the NHL draft for sure.
This is our time to shine, Mike. This is our time to shine.
Yep, absolutely.
But until next time, NHL Draft Class is dismissed.